Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 388.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we confront the ghost of Christmas past and become kinder, gentler people who do more air squats. That's actually one of the deleted scenes from A Christmas Carol. He gets ripped. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and today we're going to talk about how much money millennials think they need to be happy. We'll also talk about how pretty privilege works for men. We'll ask what to do about addiction to consumerism. And finally, our highlights from 2023 and our predictions for 2024. Now, I get to introduce this week's panel, and what a, Christmas came early by just a few days with this panel, you guys. First up, you heard him on their show before. He's so delightful. He's got this just imminently addiction-worthy podcast called Fraudsters that everyone should subscribe to. He's also, just side note, one of the top 10 best Iranians in America. There, I said it. And his name is Sina Ghaznavi. Hey, Sina.
Hey, Nagin. Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
We're also joined by, he's a comedian, but he's also an actor, and you've seen him in like a million things, and you've seen his specials everywhere. He's also got a new podcast out. It's called Senses Working Overtime, and I'm in an episode of this podcast, which was super fun to do. He's had some of the most iconic roles in American television because he himself is an icon. It is the one and only David Cross. Hey, David Cross.
Hi.
So great to have you on. And before we get into the show, I just want to remind listeners they could go to patreon.com/NaginFarsad if they want to support the show for as little as $4 a month. You get bonus episodes of the show. I mean, if you like the show, get more of the show at patreon.com/NaginFarsad. And don't forget to leave reviews of the show at Apple Podcasts because it helps people find the show. And I just want to let listeners know that we're recording this a little bit early. So if there's news that happened this week and you feel like we should be covering it, we won't be covering it because we're recording too early. All right, let's get into it with topic number one. The data is out. A recent study found that millennials who were surveyed said they need to earn $525,000 a year with $1.2 million in the bank in order to be happy. That is their happiness number. Now, there's more data that I want to share with you guys. But first off, just like David Cross, how does that number strike you that they would need $525,000 to just be baseline happy?
Well, I think the whole thing is meaningless and without any merit. I don't know what kind of poll this was and whether they were interviewing millennials in California, what part of California, was it rural, was it suburban, was it urban, is it the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, was it New York City, was it Florida? I don't know who these people are, I don't know anything about this, and I think it has literally no merit and doesn't mean it's not worthy of discussion.
Sina, what did you think of this number?
Well, let me just say, I just paid off $300,000 in student loans over the course of just over 10 years.
Shit.
And so as the oldest echelon of a millennial, I don't know how I would ever get to this number. I don't know how I'd get to 1.2 in the bank. I don't know how I'd get to 525 a year. My checking account has been abysmal for more than a decade. When I told my parents...
TikTok, dude.
Exactly.
TikTok.
I gotta stop screwing around. I told my parents I paid off these loans. You know, they thought my dad literally asked me if I was in the mob. which I took as a compliment. I took it as like high praise.
Wow. It's crazy to think that if you didn't pay off $300,000 in loans, you would have $300,000.
Oh my God. Huge. I got to run for office.
That's fucking great. Well, I mean, okay. So this, in fact, might be a garbage poll. Assuming that it is or is it, doesn't matter. There was a number that was associated with happiness a few years ago. I remember there was like a TED talk or something about happiness, blah, blah, blah. And the number, I think, at that point was $72,000. They found that if people made about 70, and it wasn't like a few years ago, maybe it was like 10 years ago. If people made $72,000 up, if they made like $20,000, earning more definitely made them happier. But once you hit around 72 or 75, I can't remember specifically, that's when you started seeing diminishing returns, right? It just plateaued. Like your happiness level wouldn't go up if you made more than that. So this is this number, you know, it's a lot more. But do you think there's something about either of those, like, you know, those numbers that strike you as like a happiness level? Like when you were young and struggling, was there a number that you thought about?
Never. Wow. I mean, in an abstract way, it was just, I don't want to be poor anymore. I don't want to be, I'd like a source of income. I'd like a better job. I'd like, you know, to be able to say, fuck you, I quit. I'd like to not have to sneak past the landlord whose office was in the first floor of the building I was staying in. And you know, they had one of those like old timey kind of wooden doors with a big frosted glass window, but it wasn't that frosted. And I literally would duck and leave because I owed rent.
Oh my God.
I didn't have it. And so that, in that sense, like, I wish I had enough that I didn't have to worry about that thing, which I do now, then I'd be happy. But also, I laughed a lot during those years. Yeah. I mean, I did a lot of laughing. I was, you know, my friends were kind of in the same boat, most of them, and I just had a good time, you know? So I don't know what, I mean, also happiness is abstract and, in it, you know, means it's highly subjective and you know, it's like it's so useless to me. It's like that when you go to the doctors and they're like, what's your pain level? Is it 1 to 10, where 1 is a smiley face and 10 is like, you know, upset, right? And then 5, I mean, what does that mean? I don't know.
Well,
6, 4, 7, what does that mean to you?
I mean, yeah, I think the thing about being young and laughing, like, I've always found that, like, this like question about money and happiness or whatever, it's one of life's eternal questions. And yet when I was in my 20s and I had the least money, and sometimes negative amounts of money, I was actually like having a great time. You know what I mean? So it isn't, it's like the correlation is just not clear to me. Obviously, your goals change and your needs change and you have kids and all that shit. So, like, money does end up mattering more. But, here's something from the data of this potentially useless survey that I found actually interesting. 62% of millennials said they'd happily pay $7 a day for a coffee because of the joy it brings. And this tracks with me. I do spend like an absurd amount every day on a coffee. Do you think previous generations were more likely to deny themselves those $7 simple pleasures? Sina, what do you think?
I guess, well, Gen X had grunge music, so maybe they were more brooding about it and they were tight with their pocketbooks. And the boomers, you know, they had their whole thing going on. I don't know. I think millennials have realized that all the stories that boomers told us were lies, and nothing that they said was going to happen. All the prosperity, lies. None of it was going to happen. So why not spend $7? This is as good as it's going to get. We're not going to get nationalized, socialized medicine anytime soon. We're not going to have like lower costs of housing. There's rent crises all over the place. I think I'm one of the few lucky people that was able to like pay off their student loans after more than a decade. Most people will probably be paying them off for 20, 25, 30 years.
Yeah.
And so why not? Just like what money is, whatever. It's like, just throw it. Money. There's a saying in our home, money comes in, money goes out. Go buy, go get that coffee.
Right.
God bless. I mean,
I
don't like coffee that enough to pay $7 every day for it, but God bless.
But generationally, like the idea that my parents, who are boomers, would ever spend that much money on coffee for themselves, even though they made enough money to do that, like they just definitely deny themselves simple pleasures. Like,
well,
that
what about
is,
Persian parents too? Nikki, we got Persian.
I mean,
breakfast.
Immigrant parents are
immigrant
not going to spend money.
Little bit of bread, little cheese, a little bit of tea. And that's like every day I watch my parents eat like they were still in the 70s in Iran.
Yeah. David Cross, what's your position on simple pleasures?
You know, I'll tell you what, jerking off doesn't cost anything. and you know, that's free. Simple pleasures are where you find them, and it can be, you might be able to, I guess if you're out and you don't have access to coffee, which you would really enjoy, then sure, you know. But also, I'm very frugal. I grew up really poor, and I still have a lot of those habits mm-hmm. and those, you know, ingrained in me, and I would figure out a way to make coffee and put it in my pocket and carry it around.
You know what? I grew up with frugal immigrant parents, right? And I think the way it's manifested itself in me is that I definitely spend a lot of money on the coffee every day, and I definitely feel guilty every day. So that's how I do it. I don't like just make some coffee at home, you know, like a fucking normal person. I go through the whole thing that I love, but then I also go through the whole guilt that I don't love.
That's very Jewish of you.
Yeah. What brings us together. Let's go on to a more serious topic. Society has long held that hot girls have a so-called pretty privilege, but a new University of Oslo study. So, David Cross, I'm imagining a lot of students in Oslo were a part of the study. This new study finds that attractiveness actually has a bigger impact on men's socioeconomic fortunes than women. Was this surprising to you?
Not that it's, if the information's coming from Oslo, they're all, I mean, they're all attractive there. I've been to Oslo, and it's, you feel weird and freakish. And like, there are some beautiful people in Oslo, men, women, thems, theys, whatever. They're all hearty and attractive.
So are you surprised by that?
I think it's basically... I'm going to imagine that it was a handful of awkward guys who answered this question and said, yeah, it's unfair, you know?
Right.
And the other guys didn't consider themselves attractive because everyone else is attractive like them. So it's the norm. So they're not, it's like a lot of Tom Brady's, you know?
Right. Well, so basically they crunched the numbers, and they basically found that, men who were attractive during their adolescent years were more likely to experience upward social mobility, be better educated, and have more prestigious jobs and earn higher income. Sina, have you seen this kind of pretty privilege among the hot men in your life? not that you are not a hot man in your own life.
I surround myself with equal to or lower than hotness men. So it's just all hairy chested men. By the way, if you shave your chest, you are in another echelon, okay? I haven't seen David Cross shirtless. Maybe I have. I don't know. But I'm pretty sure he's got a hairy chest. There we go. There it is. Look at this.
Oh, God.
It's like, this is a different level of carved up men. And I like to do my homework for this show. I like to, like, you know, read the articles and really get in there and stuff like that. I will say, reading five interviews on this article of hot men describing how life is for them, I wanted to commit seppuku. One guy has a six-pack revolution website where it's a fitness program. He's just got ripped abs. This is unfair. It's, I can't do it. I don't want to.
You can't get in the way of a revolution, though.
Yeah.
Well, okay, listeners have heard me talk about my husband before, and the thing is about my husband, Sina, have you met my husband? Maybe.
No, but he's a hot.
Okay, so my husband is a hot, and and it's really ridiculous. I'm literally working on material about this because it's like a weird phenomenon. We also treat hot men who date like regular looking women like they're like, you know, doing a public service, like they're such good guys, you know what I mean? They're like taking one for the team or whatever. And the thing is we watched the movie Seventh Grade together, which is a tremendous film from Bo Burnham, if you haven't seen it. And I remember, and we had a conversation afterwards where I was like, oh God, seventh grade. I remember it was so awful. And I started detailing the ways in which seventh grade was awful for me. And he said, I never went through that. I just didn't have an awkward phase at all. And I was like, you fucking asshole.
Awful.
You piece of shit. What? And like, that's the thing. I think if you don't, if you're good looking from a young age and you just like don't even have to go through an awkward phase, you're fucking set up for a lot of your life. You know what I mean? And I have seen people, there have definitely been situations where like, you know, like a friend will go and try and get a table at a restaurant and they have none, and then they'll send him up and the hostess will be like, absolutely, right this way. You know what I mean? And I've definitely seen it in action. Like, people are nicer to him. And so I've, you know, just in this survey of one, pretty privilege definitely, you know, exists for men in an intense way.
There is like a weird evolutionary part of this as well. We did a series on the diamond industry and how it's a total scam, like the engagement rings are a scam. And there's this old principle in evolution called the Zahavi principle, where if you show yourself and expend resources or do something like conspicuous consumption and you do something that's really big, then people will be attracted to you in some way. And so people think that, you know, that if you're really hot and if you like show yourself to be this like big thing, then you're maybe a more trustworthy partner. So that's like part of this is like ingrained in our DNA a little bit. And then we kind of like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's called the Great Gatsby.
All right, folks, tell me about your pretty privilege. I'm so curious to hear about it. But in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until, that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back, and we're ready with topic number two. So we read a piece in by Chip Caldwell.
Topic number three.
Oh, I mean, it's technically, yeah. The first topic is like culture stuff, and it's two topics. And I know, it's like, why do I do it this way? It is technically topic number three, but it's, for old school.
Topic two, the last one was topic one. Two.
1B or subclause 3. So in topic number 75 that we're on right now, we read a piece by Chip Caldwell in The Guardian called "Too Much Stuff: Can We Solve Our Addiction to Consumerism?" And in it, he writes about his family drastically reducing how much they consume. They agreed to buy only 5 new things in an entire year. And with the holidays upon us, I felt it was like a good time to talk about this phenomenon. And before we get into it, I guess, have either of you ever gazed upon mountains of trash the way this guy and his family did and think to yourself, oh my God, I have to drastically change what I'm doing? Does this resonate with you at all?
For me, yes, but it wouldn't matter because of the household I share. My contribution, I would have to get everybody on board. And there are other people in this house who just don't share the same feeling about that.
So you've experienced some kind of frustration, like you wish you could like expend less or have less trash or whatever.
But I mean, I do. Personally do.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that because I feel like for example, I compost and my husband will regularly just throw stuff that's supposed to go in the compost bin in the regular garbage. And I'll be like, hey, just like a quick reminder, like, don't do that. You know what I mean? And he he's just like, it's not his issue. You know what I mean? It's
Hots
like
don't
an issue
give a
for
fuck.
Me. Hots don't give a fuck. They're like notoriously anti-environmental, hot guys. So it's hard. It's hard when you live with other people in your home that like for everyone to be on board it's very difficult. Sina, have you ever looked at a garbage pile and thought to yourself, I need to change?
Well, personally, no, but I did a video on these five gyres, the big spinning wheels of trash that are in the ocean. And couple of them are huge. The smaller ones are like the size of Texas. I mean, these are
Jesus
huge.
Christ.
They go up to big country sizes of it. And it's not just America. India and China are big polluters. And it's like the big thing to fix is what's terrible is just recycling. It's just having the basic recycling system.
Yeah.
And I think for me, it's like, sure, I would love to reduce waste. I would love to not be on the hellscape that is Amazon all the time. I'd love to do all of these things. But at the same time, when I throw a piece of plastic away, there's like an 85% chance we can't even recycle this thing. Like a lot of the stuff we throw away isn't even recyclable anymore.
Yeah,
there's all these different things where the recycling plants will just reject them and stuff like that. It's just, I don't know how, and this country is addicted to consumerism. It is like, you even hear people talk about it when they talk about the economy. They're like, oh, the consumer is strong. That's what's keeping the economy going. And it's like, that's just spending. When they call it stimulus, when they give stimulus to people, they want you to go and spend money on anything. They don't care what it is. They don't want you to pay down your debts. They don't want you to save money. They just want you to spend. So like every part of our culture is gamified so that we keep spending and consuming.
Well, that was the response after 9/11 was, I'm not joking.
Yeah,
that was literally what Bush said in a, statement to the United States. We need to get out there now more than ever and buy stuff, spend money. And spending money meaning but buying things. But I there's two things that are frustrating and bothersome. One is the amount of people in urban environments, New York City being a great example, and I know several people who do this, who will purchase something on Amazon that is available down the street.
Yeah.
And I don't, I mean, I, crazy. To me, it's not funny. It's infuriating and it's a big part of the problem. And you've seen the packaging that goes into one Amazon, and just getting it to your door and how bad for the environment. One thing is that is at the Target down the street or
the bodega PC across Richard, the street. Yeah. Here,
mm-hmm. I mean, whatever it is. And it's not just New York City, it's in any urban center. So that's infuriating. And then also, I mean, all of us can sit and recycle and separate our glass from our plastic, from our metal, from our compost, from our trash. But until the, United States Defense Department, I mean, they're responsible for, most of the planet's trash. I mean, they have a $1 trillion budget and as many cups as you put in the right bin, that's not going to do shit until the Defense Department, we make them cut their shit by, I don't know, 1%, 0.1, 0.5%.
Well, on that point too, David, I remember when I was living in Brooklyn, there was a hardware shop up the street from me, and I remember I bought a drill there instead of doing it from Amazon. It was just like a mom and pop shop. It had a big old school hardware sign. And this man gave me the most grateful thank you for buying a drill from his shop.
Yeah.
And it was just, he was just so, and so I, you have that one-on-one communal interaction with someone that actually helps the local economy, but also reduces the
economy of,
like,
of your heart.
There we go.
I mean, look at the damage that the and, you know, it's never going to go back, but the damage that, you know, Walmart has done to hundreds of towns.
And I
mm-hmm. yeah, and it's, you know, it's a matter of convenience, and you know, you are saving money, but the business model, which is purely capitalistic, is to undercut, and it was what Amazon did and is currently doing, to undercut everything else, so that and Uber, they're going to drive the cabs away, and then they can charge whatever they want. They're already doing it, but that's but we all go, yeah, this is more convenient.
Yeah, I mean, the you know, I'm one of these people that, like, I don't do online shopping or whatever, and one of the things that I think can be legislated upon, and I think is, like, a great thing to go ahead and introduce into your state assembly, is that the cost of shipping should be a cost to shipping, and that cost should reflect the environmental impact. So, because the thing is, we're not paying for shipping by and large, and we're not paying the, like, larger cost to society that is being incurred by an individual item being shipped to your doorstep, right? But if we put it into the cost of shipping, I bet you online shopping would go down drastically, because right now it's like we're subsidizing it by having this free shipping thing, and it doesn't make any sense.
I get it. It's a great thing if you are in a rural or even suburban rural place where you can't access these things.
Right.
But I mean, for, you know, I mean, just this shit. I mean, if you're in New York, especially, it's everywhere. And I see Amazon trucks, I don't know, 50, 70 times a day.
Yeah, it's awful. I mean, so there's the issue, I think, of, like, that. And then the other cultural issue that you were talking about earlier, which is just that we want to buy stuff, you know, and that buying stuff has had the impact of, like, changing the lives of people around the world and increasing, you know, like, standard of living in places like China, because now there's factories and they can work there and blah, 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 blah. Like, so the actually buying of stuff has had a huge impact on the world. So you can't, it's, like, hard to say that it's all bad. Or maybe it isn't hard to say it's all bad. I don't know. But there's the other side of that argument, which is the idea of, like, going super minimalist and getting rid of your possessions and only buying 5 things a year or whatever that is super classist. It's like something that a rich person even has to, it's like if you're poor, you're not thinking about your waste and, you know, your consumption. What do you think about the argument that the whole question of this is classist?
I think the, like, minimalist approach is, it gets you into a different echelon of this conversation, right? I think there's a bigger conversation of just, why can't we just reduce 30, 40% of what we do? Most people aren't able to do this, you know, on a normal basis. Most people live, poor people live in food deserts. So they have to have, like, fast food. So there's, like, countless problems that are exacerbated by just how the country is set up in this way. So I don't know. I don't
think it's classist at all. I mean, I don't think it's a, you know, you're talking about changing behavior and changing an outlook. I don't find it classist.
Yeah, even from the 80s to now, when I was a kid to now, I think the like volume of stuff has increased, and just the volume, like, when I think about, like, when I was a kid, the number of like Christmas presents I got or like stuff like that. I just do think that like the volume of stuff procurement has, you know, just anecdotally increased, and culturally, it just seems like it does. It feels like it can't keep going at this pace. You know what I mean? And also, what are we doing with all this stuff? And also, let's stop having big, huge houses with lots of closets. Maybe that'll help. I think that's one of the nice things about living in New York City, is it kind of forces you to part with things because you don't have very much space.
I mean, we just have asked people for, like, our kid just turned 2 in August here, and it was like, don't give us presents. Like, just pump the brakes on the presents. Come over, cook dinner with them, start building like memories with them and stuff like that. People that did bring presents, we like taper them out. It's for the kids. If you show them like a dozen presents and stuff, they're not going to know what to do with it. We got them hidden in the garage. We bring out one every other week like that. You can't go crazy.
I've given my daughter the same piece of used chewing gum for 6 years in a row. Different wrapper, but you know.
Yeah. And that's the kind of that's the kind of thing, the ethic we're talking about. That's minimalism right there. Is just reuse that chewing gum. All right, let us move on to topic number 900. What was the best of this is just one of the, because this is the episode that's coming right before the holidays. So I want to hear your best of 2023. What was awesome for you? It could be personal, it could be national, it could be global, whatever comes to you. And I'll just give you one just to start. I thought it was super fun that Ohio upheld a woman's right to choose in a referendum. I guess super fun is the right way to describe that. I thought a highlight for 2023. I was into that. Sina, do you have one?
Yeah. Well, obviously, I had my second kid in August as well this year, so that was like a huge highlight. So wonderful. But let's be honest, George Santos getting kicked out of Congress before he was even found guilty. I mean, that is like the closest second place to my newborn son.
Oh, David Cross, did you have one?
I mean, I had several. I personally went out on tour, which was I had to cancel the last tour I had because of COVID that was set up, and so it was such a treat to go out and do stand up all over the country and Canada and Europe, and it just, it's one of my favorite things. And so that was I was glad things had calmed down enough to be able to actually tour again. Good friend of mine. I have a house upstate where I spend as much time as possible when we can, which is less now that my daughter's in school. But my friend ran for the supervisor of the town up there and won. And this guy who'd been in that office for, dozens of years, I guess over 12 years, and just not a ethical good guy. So he beat him, and so I'm very think globally, act locally.
Act locally.
Very excited about that.
Did your friend have prior political experience? Was this their first time getting into the field?
No, he ran the prior election and only lost by, I think, oh gosh, it was like, I want to say 18 votes or something like that.
Oh,
it was
Jesus
so
Christ.
Close. So close.
There was a guy in, I think, in some town in I think it was Colorado last week who ran for mayor of that town and lost by one vote. And the one vote was that he did not vote for himself.
Yeah, he deserves it.
Yeah. Why would you do that? Always vote for yourself. But one thing this reminds me is that, like, one of my little pastimes in the last few years has been to, if a friend of mine says something like that, I think they're like have a good head on their shoulders, and they say stuff that feels like they want to get involved, I'm always being like, hey, you should run for office. I'm like basically always trying to get friends of mine to run for office. I think more people should do it. People have like strong feelings, and instead of spending all your time scrolling, you know, run for a local office and work your way up from there. Think global, act local. And so I love that story. A personal highlight for me is we talked about this on last week's episode, is that I did magic mushrooms. I also think I talked about this on your podcast, David Cross. Yeah. Because I found some of I did find some solace from some of the stuff that had plagued me. So if there's a way that people can find solace from things that plague them, whether through psilocybin or not, I think go for it. Life is so much better when you don't have that weight.
Yeah, that was an interesting story, and everything you were talking about. I found it very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, and I think what's crazy too is like that I think the results have continued. It's not like they dropped out, kind of like when you lose weight and the weight comes right back. Mm-hmm. That has not been the case for me. And also, I just want to say on another global front, this is happening now, but this episode will air next week. Basically, all the COP28 nations agreed to move away from fossil fuels. It's for the first time. And
it doesn't mean anything.
It may not mean anything, but it may mean a lot of things. We really don't know. Let's see how it's implemented, if at all. But I do think at least now, okay, the nations have all embraced that this has to happen. You know what I mean? So I thought that was nice. Sina, did you have any more highlights?
Oh, highlights for me for the other ones? I don't know. George Santos was really just so fantastic. We did a whole series on him, and we hated him so much. And we couldn't believe that he went down so quickly. I mean, really?
But it wasn't.
Really
was it that quickly? I mean, I feel like it was a full, I mean.
But they did it. I think the quickness was he got charged or indicted, and then they were just like, no, we're not even going to wait for the trial. Which is like, if you really think about it, you probably should have waited for the trial or for the conviction, but right. Like emotionally, like get the guy out of there. I mean, I think he was corrupt to the point where he didn't help anyone else in the Republican Party. Yeah. He was like corrupt for only himself. And so they were like,
and I actually, when that happened, I took it as, again, ever the optimist, as a sign that there is a shift in the Republican Party, which is that we don't want to just tolerate criminals anymore.
I don't know.
I'm not saying a full shift. I'm saying a small, a tiny okay. shift that they're like, we just don't need
practical
party.
Because the New York Republicans were the ones making the most noise, and they were right to do so because they're saying this guy is going to bring us down. You're going to lose numbers because of this guy, because of New York State. And that coupled with today, giving the Democrats power to redraw the maps, which came out today, mm-hmm. It's going to be tougher, and they're going to lose numbers in the House. That's all it's about. That's all it's about.
Well, tell me what do you feel predictions wise? Let's get into some 2024 predictions. I'll start. I'm curious to hear what you think about this one. 2023, I felt like, was very big on AI, talking about it, thinking about it, and more importantly, panicking about it. I feel like we saw so much concern, so much worry, and we continue to see that. And I think we will continue to see that. My prediction for 2024 is that it'll sort of like Y2K itself into a calmer state. Like we're so like concerned about AI taking over, becoming self-aware, whatever it's going to do, that it, in a similar way that we were about Y2K, and after Y2K happened and nothing happened, like everyone's like, oh, I guess it's fine. And part of the reason nothing happened is because people were so panicked that they immediately started to put all these guardrails and change the systems or whatever so that Y2K wouldn't affect the entire globe. What do you think about the AI panic? How do you see it changing in 2024?
David?
Well, I don't agree with the Y2K analogy. Y2K was like a glitch that was potentially in place that was based on complete conjecture and erroneous information that, of course, didn't happen. AI is so that was a singular thing. And AI is sort of like a almost like a spreading like the atom that splits and doubles its, you know, the amoeba that splits into two and then four and then whatever that's called when cells do that. I think that's what AI technology is going to be like. And we're at the very, 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 very beginning of it. And I think it's, I understand your sense of it. And I would like to think the same thing, but I don't. And when I saw this thing on whatever, some website somewhere, today about, Tesla introducing their AI robot, like Elon Musk in charge of that shit, you trust that guy?
No, but he's not actually, he doesn't actually have the skill to make any of that.
No, but like we're at the very tip. We're at the very beginning of the technology. It's crude in the way that you look at an old, you know, Texas Instruments computer, right. A Commodore 64 and playing, what was that? Oregon Trail or whatever, you know, like Atari Pong or whatever. And look where we've come since then. And I think that's the where we are now with AI. And but it's not as controllable as, you know, a video game.
Cena, thoughts or predictions?
Yes. Yeah, so thoughts on at least on the AI thing that you're referring to. We're in a space race right now with AI, whether it's a company or as a country, the United States, with our, you know, Googles and Microsofts and stuff like that. They're in a space race against China to just get as much of this training data into their large language models so that we can get the one that rules them all. That is really where we're at. I think there is a sentiment that it could, like, the panic could die down. I think one of the reasons why it was so crazy right now is because big companies were firing departments of people. I mean, interest rates went up. So there was like no one was able to borrow and like move money around cheaply. If that happens next year where interest rates go down and all this money starts flowing, that kind of covers up problems. If the stock market goes up, it kind of covers up some things. I don't think the AI thing is going to stop like or slow down or not be. It is going to, the volume is only going to turn up exponentially over the next 3 to 5 years. And I think once you start seeing, you know, huge parts of the economy get co-opted with AI, then you're going to have to start seeing the government come in, start providing support if it will. And you're going to have this huge conversation that has to happen in our country of how do we support people that have been displaced by artificial intelligence?
Okay. And then do either of you have a prediction we can close out this segment with?
I think 2024 is going to be the year of the HOTS. Mark my words.
Yes.
Mark my words.
Okay.
Cena?
I have two predictions for 2024. My first one is that there will finally be peace in the Middle East. And my second one is that I'll finally get the lobotomy that I've been waiting for.
Oh, so by Middle East, you mean your own genital region or something?
Exactly. So much peace. Silence, even.
So, yeah. Folks, do you have any predictions for 2024? I'm so eager to hear what they are. That is the end of the show. What a fucking utter delight the two of you have been there. I mean, I'm so glad we're going into the holidays with this episode. Thank you so much. I want the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all the wonderful things that you do. Sina, where do they do that?
You can find me at Sina Now, S-E-E-N-O-W, on Threads and Instagram. Please don't X me. I'm trying to leave that hellscape. And then check out Fraudsters anywhere you listen to podcasts.
David Cross, where do they find you?
OfficialDavidCross.com. And again, I have the podcast Census Working Overtime, which drops every Thursday on the same network, HeadGum, or where, I don't know how it works, but you where you listen to podcasts. There.
And everyone should be subscribing to that show. It's so wonderful and it's so unusual. And it is really, truly a creation from David Cross that you'll love. And you know where to find me and all the things that I do. I hope that you're having a wonderful, wonderful holiday season. I want to thank everyone who makes the show a possibility. That's our wonderful producer, Andrew McGuire. Thanks to Gabby Alter for our theme music. Thanks to everyone at HeadGum for making the show a possibility. If you have any thoughts or ideas, you can reach us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. And we will be back in your earballs next week. That was a HeadGum podcast.